For a daya, the uncommanded mitzvah to be at another's deathbed. So it's a very interesting discussion. The reason why I came across this topic is because I found the word mitzvah, I'm in a place where I didn't expect to find it. Of course, when we look at the word mitzvah, the translation of the word mitzvah, and I love to do this with little kids, like, how do you translate the word mitzvah? So most little kids say, good deed. Okay, but a mitzvah is not a good deed, a mitzvah is a commandment. A mitzvah assumes that a mitzvah, one who is a commander, and it becomes a mandate for those who accept the commander as ruler, and therefore who gives commandments, which we have to do. So we try to be very careful about that. I mean, I for one, am not a fan of saying, oh, be a little mitzvah boy and pick up the pencil for me. Like, that's not, you know, it's just not the proper usage of the term. Do a chesed for me? Okay, do a chesed for me. But don't say mitzvah boy or mitzvah girl when a mitzvah means a commandment. But nonetheless, every now and then we do find the word mitzvah used in halachic terminology in a way which perhaps doesn't describe one of the 613 commandments, but is nonetheless quite significant. And in the particular case, which we're going to see soon, and I wonder why the word mitzvah is invoked, because it doesn't refer to a mitzvah of the Torah. That's why I call it the uncommanded mitzvah, to be at another's deathbed. Nowhere in the Torah does it say so. But we will see that there is a biblical precedent for the idea if in no other way, at least homiletically, using a pasuk from Tehillim to express this idea, as it's mentioned in a number of the sources in Halacha. I believe the earliest source is the Rama, though if he's quoting somebody else, I mean, I guess he's quoting the Hagos Alfasi. So the Hagos Alfasi predates the Rama. Okay, so that's probably the original source. Does anybody else describe what we're going to be seeing as a mitzvah? I don't know. Okay. Having said all that, we're going to be looking at the sources in sequence. Some of you, before I noticed that it had printed incorrectly, you may have the first source listed as number 2 as well. Some of them are listed as number 1, but the first source we're going to be looking at is Shabbos Daf Kuf Hei Amud Beis, which is the top right underneath the title. So here the Gemara talks about the rules surrounding how a person is supposed to conduct oneself if you happen to be present when somebody dies. Now, of course, before I go into this, just want to make one more thing, one more, I guess, disclaimer, and that is, you know, nowadays the way in which people, not so much live, but the way in which people die may be a little different than once upon a time, simply because there are many cases where a person dies in a hospital or in a nursing facility where they're not living at home. Obviously, when we're dealing with a situation like that, where it's not possible for one reason or another to be present or to have a vigil at the bed at all times, because you never know when the person is going to go, so we're not talking about that type of instance. We're assuming that the person is what's called a goses, is literally at death's door, that they're going to, whether it's something like hospice, or whether it's some, which could also be done at home as well as in a facility, or whether it's just something where, you know, we're at a point we're not going to the hospital, we're just, you know, we're going to ride it out, and when death comes, death will come. So that's what we're talking about. I don't want anybody to walk away from this class feeling any kind of guilt. My mother, my different circumstances which may play into you know, whatever is going to bring a person to that particular situation, and the different circumstances will hopefully guide a person if the opportunity should present itself again. Okay, we begin with this Gemara in Shabbos. And the Gemara says, the Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Ha'omid alameis mishas tzias neshama, chayev lekra, if a person, if you're present, when somebody dies, or when the soul, mishas tzias neshama means when the soul leaves, then you have to tear kriya. Ha'lamazeh domeh, to what is this compared? The Sefer Torah shenisrafa. Why? It's compared to a Torah that has been burned. And we know that if you see a Torah being burned, or if you're in such a presence, there is a halacha that we have to exhibit a sign of mourning, and we tear the Yiddish expression, I guess, would be to tear kriya. Tear kriya is to tear tearing. Okay, but that's what we say, to tear kriya. Okay, so Rashi explains why the Sefer Torah, the Torah kruya ner, because the Torah is considered a candle. Shneamar kiner mitzvah v'Torah or u'neshama nikreis ner dechsev kiner Hashem nishmas adam. He quotes two psukim in Mishlei, that just as a Torah, which is called a candle, and a neshama is called a candle, so the way in which we treat a Torah is the same way in which we treat a departed neshama. Just as we will tear our clothing over the burning of a Torah, we will tear our clothing over the loss of a person's soul. And the Ritva and others, but they'll quote Rashi and make this comment, but the Ritva is probably the most famous, and he says, why is this appropriate? How do you compare a person to a Torah? What if a person knew nothing? What if a person was an ignoramus? Every person is compared to a Torah. Now there is a practice, and the halacha records this, to stand when a great gadol b'Torah walks into a room, because that person is a walking sefer Torah. Is every person a walking sefer Torah? Most people would argue, and just being honestly, no. Most people, not many people, are tremendous scholars, know all the Torah on their fingertips. So how could it be that every person is compared to a Torah? He says it doesn't matter. Okay, he says, Perush leperusho ke'ein sefer Torah. V'lav ke'sefer Torah mamash. It's similar to a sefer Torah. We're not talking about a sefer Torah. Obviously, not everybody has the same knowledge. De'be'isa bizrua. Nekaman chavav amar aleph. So he has a different source which he alludes to. Mikamakam kasha davar she'adam chashuv ke'sefer Torah. But nonetheless, we have a question. How could it be that a person is going to be compared or equated with the Sefer Torah? Al Shema Asid, V'lekra Alav Mi'ata. That's the answer. Okay? It's because it's based on the future, what could potentially have happened, and we are tearing on him for now. In other words, had the person had the opportunity to live more, who knows? So the person had, it's about the potential. V'anachon k'moshe perish ri, the Zal, and he quotes the Ri, who says, "Demekayme mitzvasei chashivik sefer Torah tzas sharoi livkos v'lekro al nafilas nishmasam." He says, it doesn't matter if a person was mekayme mitzvos, if a person fulfilled mitzvos, and to that I'll add, to any degree to which a person fulfilled mitzvos, the person can still be compared to a sefer Torah because they're fulfilling what's written in the Torah, and you can still cry, of course, and you can tear clothing for the fact that their soul is taken. Even those who are empty, so to speak, in other words, people who we wouldn't fancy as being the scholars of Torah, nonetheless, they are loaded with mitzvos, as is evident, by the way, even from people who think that they truly are paupers of deeds. When you get to their funeral and you hear what people have to say about them, you know that despite how simple a life they may have lived, every Jewish person, good, and I'm talking about good people, and even not good people, but every good person or every decent person has fulfilled mitzvahs. Yes. So that's in the halacha. The halacha does go into the question: does it apply to a katan? Right. So you're right. It is. I don't want to go in that direction tonight. Right. It is addressed, and the answer is. It's a machlokes, okay? That's the bottom line. But the answer, it does distinguish between different ages. Like, correct. It does distinguish between different ages of children who are a little older versus children who are, for example, under 30 days of age. Okay. Take a look at the tour. The tour records this this halacha. Source number two on the left. Misha meis lo meis. V'hum ha-meisim sha-ra'ui l'hisabel alehem. Kashe yizbo'er ha-chayiv l'kro alav. That if somebody dies, somebody for whom we are to mourn, we tear clothing. And he says the punishment is misa bidei shemayim, death in the hands of heavens, if you do not do kriya. That's what, and you have to tear standing. If you tore while you were sitting, the Ravid says you were yotze. Okay, it's interesting. So now he's just talking about any situation where somebody dies. We're going to get to that soon when we view in the Shulchan Aruch a little more. But certainly for somebody for whom you have to mourn, I would, by the way, if you know people who have the practice of tearing a ribbon, I would recommend to them before. You know, the heat of the moment. Hey, listen, when the time comes, you know, I don't know what this means, misa bidei shemayim. Everybody's going to have misa bidei shemayim at some point in time at the end of our lives. But nonetheless, why not? Is it so terrible? You ruined one suit, you ruined one shirt. for the sake of your parent or whatever it may be. I would hope that we could do better than tearing a small little black ribbon, and that the people who are attached to our heritage could as well. Yes.
Is it correct that the Torah is only referring to those that have a field of Avelos? As contrasted to the Gemara and Shabbos, it seems to apply anybody who's there.
No. Yes. The reason I brought the Torah is because it's in the context of a similar halachos. The Gemara was talking about if you're there at the time of death. Correct. If you're there at the time of death. I'm going to get into an example in a few minutes of how that happens. I can tell you now. When I was in Rabbi Tendler's year in YU, he told us one of his sons is a doctor, and on account of some of the halachos which we're going to be learning soon, he would make it his business that if somebody was dying in the hospital, that he would be there, and he would tear his... It came to a point where he was tearing a lot of robes. Not robes, the doctor coats. So he went back to the halacha, and we'll see the solution that he came up with so that he didn't have to tear a doctor coat every time. Okay, if you're there, so the same rule would apply. Yeah, I mean, you should get out of the room, but if you were present, you're supposed to tear Kriya. Okay?
So if you're there, you tear Kriya then. If you're not there, then
we're going to get to it.
Kriya.
Exactly. Yeah. That's... Oh, you're talking about the relative.
Yeah, no.
So we're not going to get into those halachos, because actually the part which I skipped in the Shulchan Aruch talks about if you're there at the time, you tear. And if you're the one who's supposed to be tearing because you're the Avel, then you could extend that tear. Okay? If
you don't make a new tear.
You don't have to make a new tear. The brach, I think the brach is done at the funeral, not at this moment. Okay. Anyway, Ketzad, the Torah continues. Ketzad kol amed b'shas yitzias mishama shal kol adam chayiv l'kroa. Okay, anybody who's there, when the neshama leaves, so that's Richard. That's why I brought this part, all the same siman, but I wanted to bring relevant halachos, because I know it's of interest, and I found that on shel bidei shemayim thing to just be, hey, listen, let's make sure we get it right. Okay? Be'atayim shekoron al kol adam b'sha'as yitzias v'shama kamar Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer b'pnei shedome l'sefer Torah shenisraf sh'akol chayav v'nekro alav u'perish Rashi sh'adayin ha'izeh yachol ilmod v'dome l'sefer Torah. Right? Rashi had said, since a person could have continued to learn, so he's compared to a Sefer Torah, and of course the concept of tearing, just as we tear for a Torah, which has burned, is something which everybody has the obligation for, and we saw Rashi explain the comparison, Nair, a Torah is compared to a Nair, and a person is compared to a Nair. Okay, so that's also, along the same lines, we're going to see, the bottom line is, even though a woman doesn't have the responsibility or the chiyuv of Talmud Torah, nonetheless, we're going to see that the kriya is done for a woman as well. What? Absolutely. Look, it's a machlokas. The bottom line is, the proofs which I'm bringing to you today say yes. Okay? See? Liberal rabbi. There you go. Okay? All right. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, and this is, of course, number 3. This is the source for the title. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Omrim tziduk hadin mitzias neshamoch shemegin l'dayin ames korei ha'avel." We say tziduk hadin. Of course, we do this now at the funeral because we're not necessarily present at the time of death, or it's done at the time of death and at the funeral. Okay, but uchishemegin l'dayin ames korei ha'avel. When we say dayin ames, that's when the avel is supposed to tear, assuming the avel is present at the time of death. Of course, the rules of funeral, different discussion. I'm not going there today. Kevin shenata adam lamus if dalad. When a person turns to die, ein rishayin. You're not allowed to leave him. Their soul shouldn't leave them, and the person is alone. Mitzvah, this is the Ramah. Mitzvah lamod ala adam b'sha'as yitzias neshama, and it's a mitzvah to stand at a person who, at the moment that his soul is leaving. Shene'amar v'yichi od lanetzach lo yira shachas ki yir'eh chachamim. I'm sorry. V'chi od lanetzach lo yirah shachas ki yirah chachamim yamusu v'gomer. And of course, that source is from Tehillim, and I gave it to you right below. And Tehillim Perek Mem Tes Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph. Can one live forever, never see the pit of Gehenna as a consequence of his sins? Though he sees that wise men die, etc. That the fool and the boor both perish, leaving their wealth to others. Now, it doesn't mean that you must see. That's not what the pasuk means. But it talks about seeing a person die. In other words, to be present. That's the source for this idea. So is it a mitzvah per se? I don't know. But I looked up other cases where the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah refer to a mitzvah. So there's one which we're all familiar with. And that is that on the night after Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to build your sukkah. Is it a mitzvah? No, there's a mitzvah to build your sukkah whenever you build your sukkah. You know, but is it a mitzvah specifically to do it that night? So I think that sometimes the mitzvah that's sometimes utilized, the term mitzvah which is utilized, is something which is a very good idea on the one hand, and perhaps a mandate which we should feel that we should feel a responsibility to do. If I say something is a mitzvah versus if I say something is it's a nice thing, okay? Kissing a mezuzah, is it a mitzvah or is it a nice thing? It's a nice thing. What's the mitzvah? Putting the mezuzah up. But if I say, no, kissing the mezuzah is a mitzvah, okay, so people will be more apt to do it. Do you need to do it? No, you don't need to do it. Kissing anything is just a way of showing love for something. You don't have to kiss the Torah, you don't have to kiss the mezuzah, you don't have to kiss your tzitzis, you don't have to kiss your wife or your husband or your grandmother. But these are nice things because they show love for one another, or love, as it were, for a mitzvah. So I think in this case as well, is it a mitzvah? Is it a commandment that if you don't do it, you're violating a commandment of the Torah? No, I don't think so. But what does he say here? Ein rashayin lipared. He doesn't say usur, it's forbidden. Ein rashayin, you're not allowed. Because if you're a mensch, how dare you? Here's a person, and they're about to lose their life. I mean, they're about to die. And maybe, we don't know what's going through their mind, and nobody here has ever died, thank God. But we don't know what's going on through there. Maybe it's the saddest thing in the world to be alone at that moment. I don't know. You're there. How dare you walk out? How could you do that to a person? Maybe they're unconscious. Maybe they're unaware that you're present. Okay, you can make a different kind of argument. Fine. But if they're there and they're aware and they know what's going on, and Rashad, how could you?
There's no.
Okay. All right. So it doesn't say it. That may be the case. Maybe it's hard for the person who's there to see it. So, for sure. So don't look, but don't leave. Okay. Now, there are a number of sources which record this idea as well. And instead of reading through all of them, what I did was I put what they added in bold. Okay, so that we'll just skip to those parts. Take a look at in source number 4, the Taz. The Taz says, why can't you leave the person alone? Because the soul, it means that the soul, it's confounded, it's confused in the moment when it leaves the body. Now, let's understand, of course, as well, that we don't understand completely what it means, what happens to the soul when it dies. The Gemara has its mahalach, and of course we follow that as best as we can. The bottom line is, I feel, and I'm not looking to sound heretical here, but we don't know. We don't know. I mean, anybody who is talking hadn't died yet, so they, you know, they don't know for sure, but this is our mahalach, and this is what works for us. What?
Nobody comes back.
Right, exactly. Right? People don't come back and tell the tale. So what? No, so the mahalach is that the nefesh is confused in some way. So for the benefit of the person, the nefesh, whatever. Look, we all say kaddish, we say all the things which we say, we say kelmal irachamim. They have meaning for people, and so I'm not going to be the one who's going to say, oh, it's all ridiculous and wrong, because that's ridiculous and wrong. How dare I say that? So, but the
point.
Because because you're going to see soon what you're supposed to be doing when you're there. Okay. Not only that, the levush says, he adds the phrase, if lo teitzei nafsho v'hu yechidi v'yamus bagmas nefesh, that he will die with just a terrible pain in his own soul. Like, look, they walked out on me. They left. How could you leave now? I don't. Nobody's ever reported about how a person felt when nobody happened to be in the room because they weren't visiting at the time. So we don't know what that is. But certainly walking out at that moment, wait, don't get back. That is something which we don't want to put upon a person. Take a look at source number 6. Okay, the Chachmas Adam, Avram Danzig, one of the great halachic sources that were studied before the Mishnah Berurah brought the Shulchan Aruch back in vogue. So he says, what are you supposed to do when you're there? He says, V'yidabru imo divrei Torah u'yomar tehillim. Okay, if the person is conscious or aware, try to speak Divrei Torah. Or if the person is not aware, just say Tehillim. That's something which people could do. Obviously, if you're reading a Tehillim book, you're not looking at the person who's dying, which may be a difficult thing to do. But you're doing something for that neshama so that it shouldn't be confused. If you're reading Tehillim, let's assume for a moment that the neshama understands what Tehillim is and understands and is aware of what Tehillim are. So if you're doing that, it could be a source of whatever help to avoid the hanefesh mishtomemes, which would otherwise happen when the person dies.
What time frame are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, how close to death or how certain, the certainty of death in the next 5 seconds, 5 minutes, 5 days?
So the bottom line is, I think we can't know that. We can't know that. I mean, doctors will say, you've got 2 days to live. The person, 2 months later, they're walking around. I mean, you know, who knows? Right. So I think, you know, there are times when we know that a person is going to die. I mean, hospice is usually a very good indication. When? I don't know. Hospice could last a week. It could last a month. I mean, we don't know for sure. But essentially what this is suggesting is either A, have that vigil, or if it seems imminent, and look, sometimes the person is resting peacefully, you know, it doesn't seem imminent, so don't, you know, then you can leave. You don't have to stay there forever. You're not bound. Nobody's chaining you there to that place. But sometimes people know. I mean, I've been to many a shiva where they said, look, they called us. They said, you better get here. And I got on a plane. I got in the car. I got there. And thank God I made it. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, an hour later, 2 hours later. So sometimes you just know. You don't always know. When you know, you know. But sometimes you don't. So we're not, that's what I'm saying. It's the uncommanded mitzvah. We're not going to tie you there forever. But if you're there, and it looks like that's what it is, then try to
how does this tie into
what?
What's the concept of gosis, and how does this tie into
so this actually appears, I didn't hear it. Take a look in number 3, the title. Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya Hilchos Biker Cholim Refua Vinota Lamus Vigoses. So there you have it. I mean, it's in those halachos. Okay, for those who don't know, gosis is a person who halachically speaking has 3 days to live. Okay, in other words, it's viewed that within 3 days they're going to die. So it opens up. It's an interesting question in the Gemara. If a person is a goses and they give away gifts to people on account of the fact that I'm dying, I don't need it, and then they get better. So what's the rule with those gifts? Do they have to buy them back? Do they get them back? So it's called matnas shivnera. Does it go back? Because the assumption is the only reason why you gave it away is because you didn't need it where you were going, but you got better. Now you need it again. So anyway, interesting discussion. Not getting into it. Take. Okay, number 7. Number 7, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So now he adds something which we haven't seen before, and actually in the Tshuva, which we're going to see below it, number 8, the Shevet HaLevi. Shevet HaLevi is Rav Ozner, who I believe is still alive in Israel. But anyway, so he the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch adds, it says, V'ra'ui l'kabetz asara shiyu b'shas yitzias neshama. Again, this is only if it's feasible, if it's possible. Like, we know that this person is dying, right now, to gather a minion. They should not be doing anything which is idle, I-D-L-E, Ela Yasku with Torah, with Hillim, with Visharm Izmarim, Kimasuda, Besefer, Mavar Yabok. So he's quoting a different source, which recommends that they do this, either to learn or to say to Hillim. Vinogin Lahad Lik Neiros, Bifnego says, and there's a custom to light candles as well. Okay, so these are different practices. Now, are all of these mandated? Do all these need to be done? We're going to see now. The question was asked to Rav Ozner, right? Ra'ui, and Noagin. These are not, you know, it's nice. It's not the same as what we saw in the Ramah in source number 3, in Siman Shin Lamitas of Mitzvah Lamod Ala Adam or Ein Rishayin Liparet Mimenu. Okay, so this is the question. The Rav Ozner was asked the question by this Rav Rafael Rothschild. And he writes, he asks a number of questions. Behilchos smachos. Smachos is what we call lashon sagi nahar, is the term, and the article has this, you know, death and bereavement. Inyanei smachos. Smachos means issues of happiness, because we don't want to say issues of sadness. So anyway, that's what he's referring to. Banhagas pura, etc. And so question number 2 was, beis sha'al kebeis. His second question was, "Im ratzui shagam etzal nashim yu nochachim asar nashim bezman yitzias neshama." If a woman is dying, if it's proper to bring together 10 men at the time that she's dying. But Omer ki b'din amida eitz al nifter b'shas tzias yeshnam beis halachos. He says there are two halachos in this regard. Number one is kadesh yisvadeh. Number one is to bring about vidui, and that's why I gave you source number 9, which is the halachos of vidui. I don't want to go into it. If we had time, I would look at it, but I don't want to get lost in that conversation because that's not the conversation that I'm looking to have. So that's number one. To help a person bring vidui. Does a woman need to say vidui? Absolutely. If a person has the opportunity to say vidui, confession, at the end of one's life, man or woman, just as we all say vidui on Yom Kippur, just as we all say vidui at any time when you think you're are supposed to say vidui at any point in time when you feel you may die soon, then a woman should say vidui as well. So that, if that's a reason, then the answer would seem to be yes. He quotes the Rama, which we had seen. The Rama says there's a mitzvah stand there. He says, there's your answer. This certainly applies to women as well. And it could also be you can have what's called a minyan nashim, a minyan of women for this purpose. However, he reminds us that this concept of having a minyan of 10 men at the deathbed doesn't appear in the Shulchan Aruch. He says it's clearly something which is added to this mitzvah of being at the deathbed. And he never heard of it being practiced at the deathbed of a woman, but obviously, as he said before, that's not to say that it can't be done or shouldn't be done. If it's going to be done, we're equal opportunists in that way to allow for men and for women to have that kavod acharon. Rav Vosner. You know now, he may still be alive. I'm pretty sure he is, actually, in B'nai B'rach. Yeah. But not to say that he's a modern Orthodox rabbi, but you know. Okay. Anyway, so the Shulchan Aruch. So in source number 9, it talks about how much of a vidui a person should do. And in Sif Beis, it just gives a text of what is a vidui shchivmirah. Vidui shchimira means the vidui, the confession made by somebody who is about to die. And you see, it's all of, what, 4.5 lines? Modani levanach Hashem lokai lokei vasai, sherfu asim umisisi biyadecha, I acknowledge that my healing and my death is in your hand, yiratzom levanach, asher tirpa'eni refu shleima, I hope that you'll give me a healing. Ve'imamus, however, if I die, tehemi sasi kapara, al kol chata'im v'abonosu p'sha'im, etc. And if I die, let my death be an atonement for all the sins which I have done. B'sein chalki b'gan Eden, put my portion in Gan Eden. V'sakeni li'olam haba, hatzafun l'tzadikim, and give my portion, put my portion in Gan Eden, and give me the merit to be in the olam haba, which is designated for the righteous. And the parenthesis he adds, v'rotzal arach kevidoy yom kippur rishis b'yado. We could say the full vidoy, right? Al chet shechatanu, etc. The full vidui that we say on Yom Kippur. Okay, so up until now, what we've seen through these different sources are a number of different ideas which are added to this uncommanded mitzvah of being at another's deathbed. First of all, reasons for why, because for the benefit of the soul, for the benefit of the individual, right? For when the soul leaves, that it shouldn't be mishtomemes. It should be accompanied by something with which it's familiar, perhaps the recitation of Tehillim, perhaps some Torah learning. The person shouldn't feel the agmas nefesh, the pain and of being alone, and the other possibilities of perhaps having a minyan present. That is, as Rav Vosner pointed out, that is something which is added. Okay, so now a person is present at the deathbed. How does one conduct himself when they are present? When somebody dies. So look at source number 10, which is the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so I mentioned before, the example of Rabbi Tendler's son, who was a doctor. So he said, so look at Seif Beis. Makom akriya b'chol makom b'veis at savar lefanav. Anytime you tear, you're really supposed to be tearing around the neck, near the neck, okay? tear the clothing. Aval im kara la'acharav, o b'shula habeged, if you tore, you know, behind, or if you tore, b'shula habeged means like down here, o minatzdadin, or over here, lo yotze, then you're not yotze. However, the Ramah says, v'yesh omrim sheyotze im korea b'shula habeged, that there are those who say that you do fulfill your obligation, meaning which obligation of kriya? The obligation of tearing, if you are present at the time of the death, when you are not the mourner for the individuals. Rabbi Tendler told us that his son took one coat, which was designated for kriya, and he had multiple tears on the bottom of the coat. So he didn't ruin the coat per se, but it was on the bottom. Like, this is what he wore, and had multiple tears on account of the fact that he would make it his business to be present when somebody died.
But if he walks into your room, he has to wear a coat.
So hopefully the person is semi-conscious. Right. Right. If he walks into your room wearing that coat, exactly. That would be like a... Okay.
My career, this happened to me once, and I was so angry that I knew the halacha. There was trouble. The person was dying, and they called me in, and he couldn't say Vidu. I said Vidu, and I held his hand. So,
all right, so. Okay, Lekrob Shloga Elu Minhagim Fim Seba Smacks. He reports where he gets this halacha. And he, of course, gives us that qualification that when is it okay to allow the tearing at the bottom of the garment? Kishikorin al shar mesim she'enam misabu malehem. When you're tearing for somebody for whom you are not mourning. Okay, when you don't have that obligation. So you really shouldn't have ruined the better part of your shirt. You should have ruined the bottom part of your shirt. Okay. You didn't know that halacha. Okay. All right. Ha'omei b'shas yitzias neshama shel ish o isham Yisrael chayev l'kro. Okay, so there you have the halacha. And it continues and says, afilu im lefamim asa avera l'tevon. Even if every now and then that person knowingly did an avera, then you can still tear kriya. Goes on to say, somebody who is a mumr l'hachin, somebody who goes against the religion completely, you don't have the obligation to tear for them. And there are other discussions about to what degree we actually mourn for these people. Okay, that's not our topic for today. All right, finally, we're going to look at the last couple of sources here. The Pischei Tshuva on Shin Mem, Sifkat and Gimel. So he quotes the Radvaz, so we'll look at the Radvaz, but he says, Shekasav demi, Shehaya im ameis, apilu echzer panav mishas yitzias neshama, chayev dekro kevan sheyuchal, kevan sheyachol liros. That if you're present, even if you turned away, because you didn't want to look, which obviously seems to suggest that it's okay to not look if you're uncomfortable doing so, but you still have to tear the clothes because you could have seen. You're in the room. You could have turned around. You could have watched. So you're present. Now, what if you're in the building and you're in the other room and theoretically you could have seen, but you're not in the room. You're not present. So that's the next. That's the part I didn't put in bold. Chol mi she'ein yachol liros af al pishu b'bayis echad imameis eino chayev l'kro. So if the deceased is now in the bedroom and I'm in the living room, I'm in the house, I wasn't present. If I'm not present, I don't have to tear my clothes. It's because it's not out of respect for the deceased. It's really, I think, it's out of respect for the neshama that as we understand it is present at the time. So it's because of that. I mean, it is out of respect for the deceased, but the deceased doesn't. It's all the things which we do is respect for the deceased, but not that the deceased ever sees or gets per se. It's the neshama that we do these things for. Of course, for our feelings for the deceased, but the deceased doesn't feel it per se. What? Who?
I thought the dead person.
No. No, the dead person is dead. No, it's the person. It's the person who's there. No. You saw the person. The person is not moving. The person is on a bed. No. He's on a bed, or she's on a bed. Okay. Let's continue with the Radvaz, just to see the source that the Pischei Tshuva quotes. So, in the interest of time, we'll just skip to the part which is in bold. And he says, "Ulinyan misha yaim ameis v'chzir pana b'shas yitzias neshamim chayev l'kroa v'adai dechayev l'kroa sharei kol she'omei dem ameis b'shas yitzias nishmaso amru." Okay, it's anybody who is there, who's standing in the presence of the person who dies at the moment that the soul leaves them, that person needs to tear their clothing. Okay, just one more source for the fun of it. I found this article, Piskei Uminhage Magensa Vigirmaisa. So this is Mainz and Germaisa? No. Mainz? Yeah, anyway. So these are halachos from Germany. So look at the last line im omed in the first paragraph, because the second paragraph is the footnotes. Im omed bebayis b'shas yitzias neshama al kol meisa Yisrael chayv l'kro al kol meisa Yisrael. So that would seem to indicate men, women, children, everybody. And so there, the footnote sends us to Yirches, which is what I gave you. This is just essentially summarizing many of the things which we've learned up until now, that a person who dies is compared to a Torah which is burned. A person still could have learned and they only live longer, so that person is compared to a Sefer Torah. So according to that interpretation, this would not apply to women. He says it's nonetheless a tremendous loss. So just as you tear for a Torah, so you tear for anybody who fulfills the mitzvos. Okay, so in other words, he's saying, even though it could be argued that we wouldn't do this for women, nonetheless, we should argue that we do this, that we do tear for women as well. Take a look at the last two lines. Uvehilchos min hagei maharash siman tov chav gimel kasav shemishas yitzias nishmaso shel adam az roa panei ashchina shehi lemala imenu v'lachein aginan la'mod Osam she'etzlo b'shas yitzias nishmaso. So this may be like the final piece of call it frosting or icing or sprinkles on our cake that we've created today. That at the time that the neshama leaves a person, then the person sees pnei ashchina, sees the face of God, shehi lemalah himena, which is right above him. And if the face of God, if the presence of the shechina is right there when a person dies, then we, those of us who are living, have an obligation, l'chein nahaginan, or at least a minhag, to stand there because of what we are all of a sudden in the presence of. And so imagine that you're in that's the closest you're ever going to get to, beside for in death, to seeing Pnei Hashchina, to seeing the face of God. How are you going to conduct yourself? Well, the halacha says, well, here's how you're supposed to conduct yourself. First of all, if you can, don't look away. Number two, stand. Number three, certainly don't walk out of the room. You know, I mean, can you imagine? You have the opportunity to see, not see, but to be in the presence of God in the way which is most felt. So who's going to walk out of the room at that point in time? So that's an important reminder, and I think in a good way to end the class. I'll open the door for if there are any other questions at this point. But essentially what we've seen is that is it a mitzvah? The Ramah uses the term mitzvah to describe this practice of being present at somebody's death. We've seen all the different things which were added, as I summarized before. Whether it's for the sake of the soul of the individual, that the soul shouldn't be confused when it comes out, or for the sake of the individual itself, they shouldn't feel alone, or they shouldn't feel the agmas nefesh. So there are different practices, whether it's the Tehillim, or the Davening, or the Learning, the presence of a Minyan. These are different things which have been included over time, mandated or not mandated, good ideas or not good ideas. But essentially, I think, and this is really the main idea, that on the one hand it's good for the deceased, but on the other hand, as we saw from the last source, that it's also good for us to be present. It could be a very spiritual moment, as sad as the moment is when a person dies, but it could be, in a sense, an uplifting moment. How many people were not present at a death and to this day feel guilt about it, versus those who say, I was there, and as sad as it was, I'm so glad I was there. So let us hopefully, when we have the chance and the opportunity and perhaps the privilege to be there, to recognize that we're in the presence of God, and appreciate the gift that we have to be there.